DEA.
Sure.
Is there any chance we can get a follow-up report from the DEA that addresses those questions?
I thought they closed the case on this.
They did.
They did?
Yeah.
They closed it?
Yep, they provided, Madam Chair, members of the board, they did provide all that information. You guys had that previously.
Okey dokey. We're gonna keep moving here. Everybody's good?
Madam Chair, could I ask staff, Nikki's Place does not have a responsible lit area. Are they closed for business?
So I did, sorry. So I did follow up with the owner of Nikki's Place, and right now they are closed until they could find a responsible vet, according to the owner.
Okay, we are gonna go ahead and go back up to the top of the initial investigative reviews. So now we are on our next four pack, number 1 through 4, 2411, regards to Patrick Cameron, CDM, Lynn Mackey, DDM, Melissa Lazor, DDM, Stephanie Wood, DDM. Please note that Dr. Thompson has recused some of these items, and the case summary is the same for all of them, correct, Tracy?
Yes, it is. That's correct.
Go ahead and read the summary for us.
So, thank you. Case 2411, Dr. Patrick Burns. Case 2412, Lynn Mackey. Case 2413, Melissa Mazur. And case 2414 is Dr. Stephanie Foote. On May 12, 2023, Daphne, a 12-year-old female golden retriever mix, was presented to Dr. Burns on emergency for lethargy and vomiting. Diagnostics were performed. Concerns for a foreign body obstruction was relayed to complainant, and exploratory surgery was recommended. The dog's ALP and H and hematocrit values were brought an increased risk to the surgery, but those factors did not make the surgery prohibitive. Later that morning, Dr. Mackey contacted complainant after examining the dog. Although a foreign body obstruction was a possibility, she had concerns about cancer due to the dog's history. An ultrasound could not be performed due to their radiologist not being available that day. Therefore, surgery was offered as a diagnostic and treatment, depending on the findings. Complainant agreed. Once in surgery, Dr. Mackey found two intestinal masses, free fluid, a splenic mass, and a liver mass. She contacted complainant to discuss her findings. Dr. Mackey recommended removal of all the masses for a biopsy, and the complainant agreed. The dog initially did well postoperatively. It was recommended the dog eat before being discharged to go home. During the night of May 13th, 2023, the dog's mentation progressively declined and her abdomen became distended. On May 14th, 2023, Dr. Mazur cared for the dog. She noted that the dog was obtunded and had abdominal pain. Blood work revealed significantly elevated renal values along with other changes. Medications were added to the dog's treatment regimen. Complainant was advised of the dog's declining condition, and the pet owners visited the dog. After extensive consideration, the pet owners made the difficult decision to humanely euthanize the dog. Complainant contends that the dog was misdiagnosed with a foreign body obstruction. An abdominal ultrasound was not performed to further evaluate the dog's condition, which led to an unnecessary surgery. Complainant believes the dog's surgery prematurely ended the dog's life. And the committee concluded that no violation of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, and it was moved and seconded that these cases be dismissed with no violation. And the motion was moved with a vote of 5-0.
Okay, thank you, Tracy. We do not have the complainant present, and we've got Mr. Stoll for one and Honester for the other three. Are you guys making statements?
Correct, monitoring only.
And Dr. Nassif, you are the lead on
the case. Okay. This case is very involved. Briefly summarized, because we have four doctors involved, was presented to the emergency specialty hospital. Surgery, follow-up care, but the ultimate diagnosis of GI lymphoma, euthanized. And so, to discuss each of the individual doctors and their role in this, beginning with 2411, Dr. Burns. Dr. Burns was the initial clinician involved when the dog was brought to the emergency clinic. And with the with Dr. Burns, I think the issue is a communication issue. The complainant is adamant that there was no mention of any possibility other than foreign body obstruction. She stated if cancer was the diagnosis, they wouldn't have done surgery, which on radiology, you can't diagnose cancer. And ultimately, when neoplasia was presented to her, she did ultimately go ahead and authorize the surgery. In the respondent's narrative, there was a statement made that there were no guarantees or confirmation as to what the source of the obstruction was. And I didn't know really what to make of that statement. It sounded pretty vague to me. In the investigative committee, listening to the respondent, there was, I think, little clarity regarding that issue. In the record, there's no documentation of a discussion with the complainant regarding possibilities other than foreign body. But the respondent did defer to the surgeon, as expected he would, to make the final decision as to the surgery. So with 2411, Dr. Burns, I think it's just a communication issue. I'm going to hold my motions to the end after I discuss all the doctors. In the case of 2412, Dr. Mackey, again, she's the surgeon involved. Issue of communication, she did discuss the possibility of tumors as well as foreign body. And by the way, they possibility of tumors was in the radiology report. But the decision was made to proceed with surgery. Regarding the complainant's assertion that the patient had significant liver disease prior to the surgery, that's without merit. We just had an outcross elevation mild in a 12-year-old patient. It's not evidence of significant liver disease. The respondent proceeded with surgery with the assumption that there was an obstruction. Hence, that was the urgency. Ultimately, according to her notes, it was determined that there was no obstruction. The ileus seen on the radiographs, therefore, was functional and not mechanical. But there was no way of knowing that prior to going into surgery. And if we look at the surgery itself, she performed an intestinal anastomosis to remove the tumors in the bowel, that section of the bowel with the tumors, did a liver lobectomy. That was a clinical judgment at the time. Turned out to be a benign nodule. She did describe some other abnormalities in the liver, but performed a lobectomy anyway for this large nodule. The splenectomy was also a clinical judgment at the time, and that also turned out to be a benign nodule. And the discussion of this ultrasound is where I would like to ultimately get to. But first of all, with Dr. Mazur, now she's the aftercare clinician. Case 2413. I have no issue with the extensive follow-up care, no issue with communication. There were positive signs and then rapid decline, and this was expressed to the complainant. It's unfortunate that the complainant's perception of the respondent's demeanor was so negative, but we've talked about it in a lot of these cases during euthanasias. In this situation, these things can happen. It's certainly not a violation. Moving on to 2414, Dr. Foote was the supervisory role in this and had the after communication after the events occurred. And it was very extensive and thorough. I saw no issue with her communication. But what I would like to address is this lack of an abdominal ultrasound. That was only briefly addressed by any of the respondents and the respondent's attorney at the IC investigative committee, and no detailed explanation as to why or what the normal procedure would have been or any other options. And that was concerning to me. This is a specialty practice that has radiologists on staff, and so they certainly have the equipment, have the expertise to obtain images. We know that because they perform AFAST. So they do ultrasounds. And they know how to obtain images, and they have all the equipment. They said a radiologist was not available. Well, radiologists are not available in most practices, yet images are taken and interpreted, just as the radiographs were in this case. Radiographs were taken, sent to the specialist, and they got a report. Excuse me, in this practice, we have the equipment and the knowledge to obtain images, and also has demonstrated the ability to have them interpreted, if necessary, by telemedicine. So I think this is important because the abdominal ultrasound information added to the diagnostics in this case might have done two different things. It might, could have provided the complainant more information that they could have used to help with their decision. Seeing ultrasound images of the masses and the tumors and the, in the GI tract and other places could have affected the decision to go to surgery. And it also could have changed the surgeon's approach to the abnormal tissues, excuse me, discovered at surgery. The surgeon stated, this is what I have to offer you. I'm a surgeon, I'm going there. And that's absolutely right, that's what she had to offer. The bottom line is, there's no statute making ultrasound mandatory, nor is the failure to obtain ultrasound images below the standard of care. So that's what we're faced with here. So that was my biggest concern with the case. And so with that in mind, I would proceed to motions. In the case of 2411, this is again Dr. Burns, the initial clinician, I would make a motion to dismiss with no violation and issue a letter of concern that there needs to be documentation in the record of a complete differential when discussing a case with an owner that does not have a diagnosis.
Okay. I'm sorry, did you say letter of concern?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, that we have to relate to the owners all of the possibilities, especially those in the radiology. Apparently it's not done. That's the reason for the letter of concern.
I'll second.
Motion and a second to issue a letter of concern in the case of 2411. There's no further discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion passes.
In the case 2412, Dr. Mackey, the surgeon, I would make a motion to dismiss with no violation and issue a letter of concern that there needs to be an alternative to obtaining ultrasound images when a radiologist is not on the premise. And the reason I make that letter of concern is, again, in this particular case, it's not a violation, not the most standard of care, but that's why we do letters of concern, because we have an issue with something that happened, and we'd like to point that out. So I probably should have not made that part of my motion. But
second.
We have a motion and a second to dismiss with a letter of concern in the case of 2412. Again, thank you for clarifying the ultrasound piece of it, because that, being the non-vet on the board, I know that vets can still, even if you're not a trained radiologist, you can still read ultrasounds, right? Or is that not one where you would feel comfortable if it was?
Sometimes you can read them yourself if things are obvious. I think more often there's interpretation by a radiologist. And we know that could have been done because they sent the radiographs to a radiologist and we reported on them. So that's.
It was the urgency with which I understand when you have a pet that's potentially ingested a foreign object. Mm-hmm. You know, time is of the essence, and so if they were.
But they could have taken some scans.
Okay.
And got the interpretation just like they did the radiographs.
Okay.
And then use that information to discuss it with the owner.
Okay.
Or again, like I said, make some other adjustments during the surgery, possibly.
Okay. Well, I think the ultrasound, the option of ultrasound and the benefits of potentially doing the ultrasound versus surgery should have been discussed. I'm not sure it wasn't, because we just have what's here before us, not they didn't hear exactly what was said. There was discussion about an ultrasound and not being able to do it, which leads me to believe there could have been conversation around, well, could we wait, and what would happen if we waited for the radiologist to get back or whatever, right? Like, I feel like there could have been more conversation than what we know, and I don't actually feel like ultrasound is part of our standard of care in this situation. I think surgery is an option, and I think there are a lot of people that would have picked surgery, and I don't feel like she did anything wrong outside of potentially she could improve her communication around what the options were. But otherwise, I don't see how it's a violation. Or even, to me, I wouldn't even say it's a letter of concern. My bigger concern is the fact that this dog went to another clinic 4 times for not eating. History of diarrhea, lethargy, multiple times not eating, multiple doses of steroids, and no answers. That's my bigger concern, right? Like, we have a history here of this dog not doing well, and that's why I voted yes on the first one, because I feel like there was a history that made you that this wasn't an acute obstruction, and that would have played into the differential list. But for the ultrasound, I feel like she didn't have a way of immediately getting those results. And yes, you could have done this, but they may not even have telemed set up because I have radiologists. I don't know. And maybe it would have, she felt like it was going to take too long to get those results, and it would just be easier to go in and see if she could correct the issue. So that's just fine.
I understand from a pet parent perspective, you're thinking, gosh, I wouldn't have put my pet under that, you know, but you know, perhaps it's hard to say. It's easy to say, I wouldn't have done this. Had I known it was cancer, then I would have.
Well, yeah.
I would have done something different.
But she discussed the potential for cancer with the owner.
Right.
The owner was very aware this could have been cancer. Dr. Burns didn't do it, but she did, according to the record.
And approved the surgery.
Right. So it's not like the owner went into this thinking it was a foreign body or being told it was a foreign body and it turned out to be cancer. She was ultimately given a differential diagnosis of cancer before they went to surgery.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. Possibility.
Right.
So yeah, my reason, I agree, it's not a violation, but I think that's why we issue letters of concern when we see something that happened. Yeah, if this was a rural practice without ultrasound, or a one doctor practice and there was no ultrasound, and you think the dog's obstructed and you need to go in there, absolutely. The reason I believe their letter of concern, because I believe that we should have had much more of a discussion about the ultrasound and why we can't do it. The investigative committee interview, the complaint said I had no idea that there could have been more information. She said I had. I did change my mind. And I would have liked to see this practice have all the information that they're disposable before going in. So that's the reason for the letter. So
okay. So we've got a motion and a second to dismiss case 2412 and issue a letter of concern. There's no further discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Okay, now 2413.
2413, this is Dr. Mazur, did follow-up care. In this case, I would make a motion to dismiss with no violation.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to dismiss case 2413. If there's no further discussion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes.
Okay, in 2414, Dr. Futch did the after communication. And in this case, I would make a motion to dismiss with no violation. The same letter of concern, hospital protocol, there needs to be an alternative to obtain ultrasound images for a radiologist as well.
Okay.
Second.
A motion and a second to dismiss case 2414 and issue a letter of concern. There's no further discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Nay. Motion passes. All right. Everybody like to take a quick break? Yes? Okay. Let's go ahead and take a couple minutes. I was going to say, unless nobody wants, don't want to keep going? Nod yes, say
keep
no.
Keep going.
Okay. Okay, let's go ahead down to number six, 2416, in regards to Nicole Hartman, DVM. Tracy, if you'll read the summary.
Case 2416, the complainant is Daniel Flattery. The respondent is Nicole Hartman, VVMNS. On July 11, 2023, Bailey, a 12-year-old spayed female lab collie mix, was presented to respondent for limping. Respondent examined the dog and noted skin lesions and redness near the caudal aspect of the axillary region. There was no lump near that area that complainant had requested respondent evaluate. Respondent also found mammary tissue around the most cranial left nipple that was thickened and inflamed. No other thickening was noted and on the rest of the mammary chain. Radiographs of the forelimbs were performed and a fine needle aspirate was obtained of the lump near the axillary area. Nothing of concern was found on radiographs or on the cytology. Respondent's assessment was mastitis or osteoarthritis, soft tissue injury or other. The dog was discharged with an anti-inflammatory and an antibiotic. On July 29, 2023, the dog was presented to Foothills Animal Hospital with a sore on the mammary gland. Inflammatory carcinoma was suspected and a referral to an oncologist was offered. Complainant declined and elected to take the dog home until her quality of life diminished. On August 1, 2023, the dog was humanely euthanized. And the committee concluded that no violation of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, and it was moved and seconded that the board dismiss this issue with no violation. And the motion was approved with a vote of, it was 5-0.
Thank you. We do not have the complainant nor the respondent present today, and Dr. James, you are the lead.
Yeah, so, you know, in this case, I think my biggest concern here was whether or not follow-up was done after they treated for the mastitis and the osteoarthritis, right? There was a period of about 2 weeks, between when this dog was seen and treated and when it went to what was the second clinic. I would like to have seen follow-up in there, but I think ultimately this owner didn't call back to the clinic when things aren't getting better or anything either, so I'm not so sure that that would necessarily make a violation. It just was a little concerning to me that we didn't have follow-up on that. Ultimately I feel like she did the cytology, she did, you know, initial diagnosis as far as what she was going to treat for, and had it not have gotten better, I think you could have pursued other things. But at this point in time, I would support the findings of the investigative committee and make a motion that there were no violations in 2014.
Second. Okay.
A motion and a second to dismiss case 2416. There's no further discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Nay.
Okay. Moving on, we're going to go to number 11, 24, 22 in regards to Milan Gupta, EDSC.
Case 2422, the complainant is Kathleen Seymour. The respondent is Nilan Gupta, BVSC. On July 14th, 2023, Caesar, a six-year-old male domestic short-haired cat, was presented to respondent due to a urinary bladder obstruction. Diagnostics were performed to confirm blockage and elevated kidney values. Respondent sedated the cat and unblocked the urethra. The urinary catheter was tied in place and the bladder was flushed with saline. The respondent recommended referral to an emergency facility. Complainant declined, and therefore respondent offered to care for the cat overnight. During the night, it was determined that the cat could not express his bladder on his own, and further blood work was indicated stage 4 kidney disease and post-renal azotemia. On July 15, 2023, respondent reported to complainant that the cat had bladder atony and stage 4 kidney disease. Complainant elected to humanely euthanize the cat. And the committee concluded that no violation of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, and it was moved and seconded. The board dismissed this issue with no violation, and the motion was approved with a vote of 5-0.
Okay, thank you. We do not have the complainant present. We have Mr. Stoll.
Monitoring them. Thank you.
Okay. And Dr. Thompson, you are the lead on this one.
Yeah, in this case, it seems as though for the complainant, the big concern was the having to spend the money to get to the diagnostics, to get to the answer, and she felt that, you know, a veterinarian should be able to have ascertained this information prior to doing these things. And I can understand the frustration of when you have a large bill and unfortunately you don't have the outcome that anybody would have wanted. But looking back at this case, it was an emergent situation. The doctor worked it up and took care of this cat. And the more we look into it, the cat had actually been sick for 2 weeks prior to coming in and was in a critical state. So the amount of care that the cat got, again, unfortunately, it led to a situation where it was ideal to humanely euthanize the cat. I don't see any violations in the way that this cat was cared for. I think another big issue that was brought up was communication, and not necessarily that there were misses in communication, but in being able to understand the veterinarian, given his accent. So my recommendation is to dismiss with no violation.
Second.
Okay. We have a motion and a second to dismiss case 2422. Is there any further discussion?
Yeah. Yes, I am. So, in this case, I believe this blood work was done in the hospital. Is that right? I believe this was, yeah, okay. So I realize that veterinarians look at blood results, and they all have different ways of interpreting or where they put emphasis and that type of thing. And when I'm reading through this, it seemed that the respondent really, really wanted an SDMA. I don't understand that. SDMA is a screening tool used to detect very early renal disease. We had this blood work done in-house with these extreme abnormalities. So I don't understand, I've got to get more blood and do an SDMA. And it seemed like it was, he wanted the SDMA for prognosis. So I had that. The other concern I had in that regard was the communication with the complainant regarding that lab work. I mean, we had a potassium of 9.8. That's almost not compatible with life. A bilirubin of 12, 33,000 white count, and a BUN and creatinine above analyzer range. At some point in time, that blood work was available and could have been given to the owner and said, this is not looking good, you want to keep going.
I've had those same concerns. I wasn't sure on the SDMA either, because my understanding is, you know,
That's earlier detection than when your kidney values are going to rise. But what I would say is, did you feel like maybe this doctor felt like the kidney values were post-renal and not truly renal? And so if they got the SDMA, they would find out if it was really truly renal? That's kind of the thought process.
That's truly renal.
Because if the cat was blocked,
you
can get those elevations, right? And so if in his mind he's trying to determine, is this truly a renal case versus I have a blocked cat and has had issues with being blocked before, is this a way to help me determine if this is a chronic problem, like a chronic kidney problem, or is this just a result of this urgent situation?
Yeah.
That's kind of how I took it,
but I wasn't 100% sure. What I was putting in to get to that is what I would say.
So I felt the communication was lacking regarding the prognosis after the blood work. And I think that was the basis of the complaint. I also have concern that the obstruction relieved and a catheter was placed, and the record indicated it was sutured in place, but there was nothing in the record as to when that catheter came out. When was it taken out? And admirably, this respondent spent the night with this cat.
I do want to recognize that as well.
So, was the catheter in place? And if it was in place, well, then the cat couldn't have voided his bladder because the catheter is in place, it just drains out, right? So was it not in place? We don't know. The record doesn't tell us that. If it was, he said he flushed the bladder and manually expressed the bladder. Well, the only way to really do that would be as if the catheter was in place. So otherwise you're not going to be catheterizing a weak cat to flush his bladder. So I had concern about that he flushed the bladder and manually expressed and stated the cat couldn't void on its own. So was a catheter in there or was it not in?
I was assuming it was in, and he was saying it couldn't void on its own if he had taken it out.
If he had taken it out, how did he know
that? Well, based on it hadn't been in very long and he was blocked.
So he was assuming that if I take this out, he's going to
re-block. Yeah. And
that's
why he
stated
kept him overnight.
He couldn't void on his own. He stated the cat can't void on its own.
He couldn't void on his own while it was blocked. And so he felt like if he put the catheter in and he left it in, he sutured it in, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then what I took it as is if he had taken that catheter out, there was concern that he wouldn't be able to void on his own because he couldn't void on his own before and it hadn't been in long enough, and he thought this cat would reblock.
But that's not what the record says.
That's reading into it a little bit, but that's what I kind of...
The record says the cat couldn't void on its own. How does he know it couldn't void on its own? If he's assuming if I take this catheter out, it's not going to be able to void on its own. He doesn't know that. And that's the important thing here.
Yeah.
That's what we look for post-obstruction. And there is some differences. Some doctors like to take it out early. Some want to leave it in 3 days. That's kind of old school. But there's a lot of individual ways that these are handled. And I couldn't tell was the catheter in the cat or not. Flushing the bladder and expressing tells me
it was in.
But we don't know when it was removed.
Yeah, and I was going to say, because in his response, he says that he couldn't express his bladder by himself and the bladder got distended again. No, there is no statement as to when it was taken out, but it does say at some point it was out. In his response, I like the summary of the case. So he does address that the catheter wasn't in when the cat couldn't.
Was it not in, or was the catheter plugged up, which does happen?
Well, it says, yes, it says subsequently he could not express his bladder by himself as the bladder got distended again. So that's when that's when the IV fluid was.
So that's my question. That's why I would have a lot of questions. The grave prognosis was only given after the aftercare was failed to provide any positive results. That's when the current prognosis was given. Maybe that's okay. The other thing is, he said, in a cat with these renal values, he stopped the IV fluids and switched to sub-Q. In a cat with renal values above the analyzer rate, because he was worried that, the bladder would disperse. I don't know if I could read that, but he said, I stopped the IV and
why wouldn't you be diuresing?
Yeah. Why don't you keep diuresing this azotemic cat? So, that I have a lot of questions in this case. So, sorry.
That's okay.
Well, I think we have the option to say there's a lot of questions as far as how well some of this was documented, and maybe that's a letter of concern. Or we move it to an informal, get some of it answered, and then decide whether it's a letter of concern or violation. And I think Tom Center, we've been lead on this one.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I had put out a motion in the second, but if Dr. Bowsley wants to make a motion to.
We have to vote on the first.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't think, do we have a second?
Yeah. There was a second.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so the first motion for case 2422 is to dismiss with no violation. So. Then we have a second. I know I'm delaying it here. I'm trying to figure out where I'm going. Okay, so all those in favor of dismissing this case, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Nay. Nay.
Okay, so I'm pretty sure the nays have it there. So, Dr. Nosley, do you have an alternative motion?
In this case, I would make a motion to move to confirm.
Second.
Motion and a second to send this case to an informal. There's no further discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Nay.
Motion passes. Okay, now we are going to take a short break, and then we're going to come back